Hello.
Good morning, Soraya. It's Jeff. How you doing this morning?
All right.
Hey, I'm really excited about today's episode. So, did you know from the
Oh, this is a
cur-
great one.
It
This is a great
is.
one. Tell everybody who we're going to talk to this morning.
Well, I was just gonna say that we've talked to all of the current Dream Syndicate lineup members since we just did Jason Victor, and we've done Steve Wynn on the show a couple times. We've had Chris Kakavez and Dennis Duck. So rounding this out is Mark Walton. And I don't know if you remember, but Ronnie told us that Mark's got some great stories.
I'm ready to listen to all of it.
Yeah, so let's hope we can get some of these stories from him.
Hopefully he'll share.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get started.
Sounds good. Hi, this is Soraya.
And this is Jeff.
Our podcast is called Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme.
A podcast where the two of us play music that we like and share anecdotes and background about the tune.
We hope you'll join our conversation. And without further ado, agrubiar.
Let's get groovy. All right, let's add Mark to the call.
Hello.
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, Jeffrey. Good to
It's
hear your voice.
All right.
me and Soraya this morning.
Hi.
Hi, Soraya. Happy Saturday to y'all.
And to you too. So, Mark, if you don't mind, we're just going to hop on into this. Sound good?
Why not? Let's do it.
So, first of all, for our listeners, we want to welcome Mark Walton here to Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme. On today's show, we are talking with him, and Mark's got a pretty interesting musical resume. He's played with quite a few different artists, including Chris Kakavets and Junkyard Love, Giant Sin, Continental Drifters, as well as the Dream Syndicate. We first learned about Mark when his name appeared on the 1984 Dream Syndicate Live EP. This is not the new Dream Syndicate album Live. And Mark, if you wouldn't mind just sharing with our listeners how you came to join the Dream Syndicate.
Okay, well, it was not much to it. I own a studio out in Van Nuys. I started in 1979. My brother's still running it. It's going on 40 years. But I was working there. I had a lot of friends that knew everybody, right? We all kind of knew, you know, everybody. I knew everybody from rehearsing at my facility. And one day, Carl just walked in while I was working. He asked what I was doing. And I said, well, obviously I'm working, Carl. what are you asking? And he goes, well, I meant for the next, I don't know, couple months at least. And I went, I'm not sure I understand. And he pulls out, well, the EP, the Days of White Roses and Medicine Show. It says, we're going on tour in 2 weeks. Would you like to come on tour with us?
Wow.
And that's how, and I said, can I think about it? I said, and he said, sure, give me 24 hours. And so I went home and thought about it. And I said, well, that would be kind of silly not to do it, even if it's just for the tour. So I said, yes. And that was it, really. I showed up at the rehearsal. I had met Steve previously once at a friend's house. I had never really met Dennis before. So that was first time we had, like a 5 days worth of rehearsals and went out on tour with R.E.M. right afterwards.
Wow. Wow. What a start. So I never knew that there was that connection between you and Carl. I didn't know about that. So I'm really curious because after the EP, the next studio album came out and Carl was no longer in the band. Can you tell us about his last days as a member of the band and the dynamics of that changing?
Well, you know, Steve and Carl, when I first got involved with the band, they were at odds with each other at that point anyways, you know. So I was kind of the buffer on that tour. I was Carl's roommate and we got along very well. We became good friends. after the Dream Syndicate broke up, it was just a weird time, I think. You know, we were enjoying everything. the audiences were good. And I was still the new member, so I didn't feel it was my place to kind of get involved with a lot of different things. But, you know, there was some weird stuff that went down. But I haven't talked to Carl since, so I really don't know. I'm sure he was not very happy that I continued on playing, because I think he felt that maybe we could have gone and created a band together and done something too. So, you know, I still feel kind of weird about that. But other than that, I think, you know, it was worth the staying around and hanging out with Steve and finding Paul Cutler and moving through and getting the band up to speed again. But yeah, there's not much more to Carl I can add.
Yeah.
I wish I could.
Oh, no, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
And Mark, I had a different question, and I'm one of the things Jeff and I noticed as we were prepping this session with you is we noticed some early writing credits that from what we can see predates you joining Dream Syndicate. So there are some songs on a couple of soundtracks from the mid 80s, for example, My Street, which is performed by Tiny Monsters from the Hollywood Vice Squad soundtrack. And Wild Roses, right. Performed by Shandy from the Echo Park soundtrack. And Tomorrow's Gonna Be, which we'll talk about a little later, performed by a pre-Concrete Blonde, Johnette Napolitano. There's a co-writing credit with Tom Bowles, and so we're just curious about this writing collaboration.
Yeah, well, I lived in an amazing apartment complex just in the, you know, the hills, just above in Studio City. It was called the Holiday Manor, and one of the guys that lived there was named Tom Bowles, and he heard that I was a musician. He had never written songs, but he was like, I want to write songs. Let's write some songs. And so we did. We just sat around and just drank and wrote songs. And he introduced me to Shandy. And I don't know if you know her musical life, but she's done a few interesting things. She had a song on the Flashdance record. She actually hired me, and I did some a soundtrack for a song on the Karate Kid album also at that time.
Wow.
So back in those days, I was, you know, just playing and hanging out and just writing songs. But the people that lived in this apartment complex was amazing. We had Carla Olson lived there. I lived there. Bruce Springsteen's little sister lived there.
Wow.
A guy named Body by Jake. I don't know if you remember him.
Yes.
Yeah, he lived there too. He moved to Los Angeles and got his first job as the Incredible Hulk on the Universal Studios tour.
Wow.
And would teach or try to, you know, do workout sessions and bodybuilding out near the pool, and we would all hear him, you know, pick it up, dude. Okay. But there's everybody was like an artist, an actor, musician. So yeah, it was an interesting place to live, and it was a very creative environment. So you know, Tom and I would write a bunch of different songs, and sometimes we'd get them in soundtracks, or we had a couple covers, but nothing of value. But yeah, it was fun time.
It sounds like a very creative environment to be in or in around.
Yeah, because back then I would just record them. I'd play a lot of the instruments myself.
Okay.
And I would get different singers. So I would get Shandy to sing on stuff. I had a guy named Jeff Rawlings who, you know, was in with the sort of power pop people in town. Phil Seymour would sing on some of my songs.
Wow.
I don't know, just lots of different people from back in those days. But in the 70s, when I was growing up, I would go out and see all those power pop bands, you know, the 2020s and Flintstones and The Quick, all those bands.
Great bands, yeah. So, Mark.
Yeah, so I like that. I like, you know, I'm a big power pop guy, even though, you know, I'm in a sort of a loud, sometimes abrasive, and sometimes spatial band, but yeah.
Nice. So in 1986, the Dream Syndicate releases Out of the Gray on Big Time Records, and I think this is your first studio album with the band, correct? Out of the Gray?
Yeah, it was.
And then on that album, you had a couple writing credits again on the single, 50 in a 25 Zone. And Dying Embers, which has a co-writing credit with Scott Walton. I'm guessing that's your brother?
Yeah.
And then he also plays
keyboards. Yeah, it's my brother.
Yeah, okay. So he's the one that's still working in the studio?
Yeah, he's still there. He's running it. La 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 la
felt myself moving closer to the flame. Oh, I felt the heat, yeah, but soon the flames were falling, couldn't bring me down with them. You pulled me out alive.
Yeah, I wrote that song at my mom's house on a piano, and I couldn't play piano very well at the time. And so, you know, I wanted to understand the song a little better, so I asked him to sit down, and I taught him the chords, but then I asked him to elaborate. So I thought he deserved a songwriting credit on that.
Nice, very nice.
Yeah.
And then I should also note that Johnette sings backing vocals on the song as well. So did that come as a result of your relationship from the apartment and her singing Tomorrow's Gonna Be?
No, not really. Steve and Johnette were actually boyfriend and girlfriend at that time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's a bigger story with Johnette. Yeah, you can ask him about that yourself. I don't want to go into any kind of details. I do know that, you know, when I was on tour at the Dream Syndicate, Johnette lost her apartment, and I did allow her to, you know, move into my bedroom, which my roommate at the time freaked out because she kind of took over the entire house. And by the time I got back, I had her like fumigated almost. And she just is such a big presence. She just went in there and like, yeah, I'm only here a month, but I have to make it mine. I have to have my own creative space.
Wow! Wow!
She's a very good girl though.
Nice.
I think lately she's seen some darker days. I hope she's doing well though.
Yes, yes. And Soraya, I wanted to mention to you that Jim Hill was one of the engineers on Out of the Gray. We've talked to Jim before on our show, so just wanted to note that. Mark, do you remember working with Jim?
On that session? I love Jim. Jim's a good guy. We would sometimes go out and do different things. We took a skiing trip once. Went skiing together, like in Mammoth or somewhere. So yeah, we've known each other off and on for a while.
He's got some great stories too.
Yes,
I'm sure Jim does. Yeah, Jim is responsible actually for moving sort of a little further down the time frame, the Continental Drifters, because for the Out of the Gray album, he hired Carlo to be our drum tech. And that's when I first met Carlo through Jim.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about that connection. Very cool.
There's a lot of reconnects in my life, how things work. That's one of them, though.
Nice.
Thanks to Jim.
That's pretty cool. Okay, we're going to come back to Continental Drifters. Don't worry, we're going to come back to them. But
yeah.
I wanted to ask a quick question since we're kind of moving forward in this timeline. So 1988, Dream Syndicate releases Ghost Stories, which is the last studio album that the band would record until reuniting a few years ago to record How Did I Find Myself Here? And we're just curious if there's anything from the recording of Ghost Stories, because it seems like that was a transitional year for the band and for all involved. we're just curious if there's any stories about that you remember from the recording of that that you'd like to share with our listeners.
There's definitely stories. Some of them probably aren't really my stories to tell, so I'll ignore some of them. But they were good. We had Elliot Mazur producing, and he was a funny guy. He would go out in the studio and act like a cheerleader and you know, put headphones on and dance around while we were playing and try to get us to be more energetic. I've never had a producer actually do that. He just wanted to be part of it and like get us into it and get excited. And it was like, well, that's cool. How are you going to do this? I can't imagine you doing that with Neil Young, but okay.
That's hilarious. I don't think I've ever.
It was a fun album, though. It was a good album to make, and I was very happy with and proud of that record.
Wow, that's hilarious. I guess that's better than like somebody bringing in a gun, like right? There's been I've heard sessions with other people where.
Yeah, there's been stories of producers doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So having a guy dancing around like a little elf, is better.
I'm picturing that in my mind. It sounds and looks hilarious, at least in my mind. So, Mark, I wanted to jump back a little bit because when I was, I had never realized this back when the album came out, but I noticed that you and Steve sang some backing vocals on the Hoodoo Gurus album, Blow Your Cool, and they were your label mates on Big Time Records at the time. And I know that the Bengals, Susanna Hoffs, Vicky and Debbie Peterson, and Mickey also sang on a couple songs. But how did that happen where you guys end up singing on In the Middle of the Land off that album?
Well, we were on tour in Australia at the time, and we had a day off, and they said, would you like to come in the studio and do something? And that's how that happened, really. It was that simple.
Oh, wow.
But, there's another sort of a Hoodoo Guru almost thing that happened. They did ask me to join the band right when the Ghost Story was coming out. And I actually considered it, and it just didn't work out, though.
Wow.
I considered just packing up and moving to Australia and playing with them. But I kind of, at the last minute, I was like, I have a... I'm a man of my word, and I had to put this record out with the Dream Syndicate, and I didn't want to get it confused and have people pissed off, so I sort of declined. I'm not sure if they were happy with me or not, because wow. they assumed I actually had agreed, but just timing didn't work out.
Wow, I never knew that. That's interesting. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all really nice guys. They love, all the music that we all play. In fact, when we went to Australia, the first things people would say, wow, you guys are really good. You're almost like an Australian band.
Oh.
they thought they owned sort of that, garage rock kind of thing. And I took that as a compliment, actually, more than anything.
Yeah.
And Mark, we're really curious how you came to be involved with Junkyard Love. We've had the good fortune to talk to Chris Kakavas previously, and we know that you did play with Junkyard Love for a bit. And how did you come to get involved, to become involved with that project?
Because of that first record, Steve was producing it and had asked, do you want to play on this record? And I said, sure. So I went down there. I had met Chris briefly a few times and the other guys a few times, but not much. We've never played together at that point, but you know, Chris just came in and started playing guitar, and we just followed along, do what we do. Just, you know, had that musical conversation, and it was great. It was a lot of fun. You know, I'm glad that I was involved with that record. There's some really great songs on it, and a lot of really nice memories.
And the interesting thing is, we were talking about connections and reconnections, and the last few years, Chris has been involved with the Dream Syndicate, and you guys have toured together, so another reconnection there, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, he played on the Ghost Stories record, too. So
yeah.
I did know him from that, you know.
Okay.
But I had never played with him on any of his songs. And I was really surprised because he had such a beautiful voice.
He does.
And normally I'm used to hearing him play, you know, keyboards, and he played guitar throughout the whole thing. So it was a different way of looking at what he does.
Sarai and I are big fans of Chris's, not only as a person, but as a musician, his solo stuff, yeah. And what he collaborates with other musicians. We're huge fans of his.
Well, everybody should be a huge fan. He's a sweetheart. He's, you know, he adds so much color and texture to anything, you know, musical.
Yeah, and I really
people should go out and listen to what he does.
I agree, and what I really like about the sounds, especially when he's playing keyboards or organs, he does a lot of very organic sounds that sound real natural, and that they really complement the songs. So.
Indeed, he's that glue in most people's music.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's talk about Mark Walton. So, I'm really curious about the connection with Giant Sand. You, Steve, and Chris all played on a number of their songs, most notably on their 1990 release, Swerve. In fact, you have co-writing credit on the tune Dream Stay from the album. Can you tell us a little bit about the collaboration and working with Giant Sand?
Yeah, Giant Sand, I actually played on Love Songs on one song. It was actually started, I was going on a tour to Finland. It was just like a one-off big festival. It paid us good money. And Hal called me that day going, hey, Mark, hey, you want to go in the studio and record tonight? I went, well, I leave at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, ah, what the hell, sure.
Wow.
And went down and it was Chris, myself, John and Johnny and Hal. And we played Is That All There Is?
Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friend, then let's keep dancing. Let's bring on the booze. If that's all there is.
It was a craziest session, but it turned out really wonderfully. And we stayed friends for a long time. And then out of the blue, he called me at that time for Swerve to go out on tour. So I did. I went out to Europe. I did a long 2 or 3 month tour with them, came back, played a few, you know, shows around the United States with them. And then we started just going into studios. We went to a studio in Boston, and we had Julianne Hatfield kind of as our driver. She volunteered to do our driving on tour, but then we asked her to sing on something. Then we got back to LA and we, you know, how continued to want to record. So then he said, hey, let's get Steve and get all these other people and record some more songs. And it's with Hal, he's very spontaneous. He never puts a lot of thought into it. He just says, hey, this would be a cool combination of people. Let's record and see what happens.
Wow.
So he's very good that way. Sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes it's magical. And I love How to Death.
Wow. So how did the song Dream State come together?
It was just a jam.
Okay, and then that got fleshed out.
Just like a lot of things that we do these days, I like to use that musical conversation, because that's what I think we do best. You know, we just put these pieces of wood with strings on and you know, sticks and bang and just make, you know, just have a conversation. That's what I've done all my life, and I feel much more comfortable doing that than doing what we're doing right now.
I'm with you there.
You know, I find it really interesting, Mark, that you say, you know, I'm much more comfortable with a musical conversation. And when one takes a look at your work, you've had so many different kinds of musical conversations.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me not to think that you're not enjoying this talk, but we're enjoying it.
Well, no, I am enjoying it. You guys are great, and you do a really wonderful thing by calling attention to all of us and what we do. So thank you for that. And again, I'd love to tell stories, but I like to sit in a bar with a beer or a whiskey and actually tell those kind of stories. The ones I'm not supposed to tell.
All right.
We can do that too.
We'll accept that invitation.
Yeah. We'll pick up the bill on that one.
Yeah.
You just let us listen. That's it.
We'll pay for the beer. Absolutely. You provide the stories.
All right.
It's funny. We had a band from Canada, Elephant Stone, they're called, and they're really wonderful. But every day they would hear me tell a story, and it became like, Uncle Mark, tell us another story. So every night I would come out and we'd talk about something completely different, and just to have a fun time, you know, and have a different kind of a conversation. So it would be story time, say Mark Walton. And that would be after the end of the night, and we'd have a few drinks. So,
nice.
Yeah. So Jeff,
we do that often.
I think we need to invite ourselves for a story time with Mark Walton and just pick up the tab and just see where it goes. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. So, Mark, I do want to come back to, I think, for me, Continental Drifters is such an interesting project. One, because of, you know, there are all these members that kind of come in and come out. It's this very fluid. But we've played Continental Drifters on our show before. And Ronnie Barnett told us that there essentially the band had a residency at Raji's.
So 1992, every Tuesday for the entire year, we played. And we were all playing in different bands and doing different things. So, it started off as an original band, but we loved covers, so we would play covers. And then we thought, you know, we have so many friends, let's just invite our friends down and we'll play their songs and our songs and whatever. So it just became this big revolving door. And we had a lot of auxiliary drifters that, you know, would come when the primary drifters couldn't make it because they had other commitments. You know, things went around in circles. So, I mean, it started off with just a 5-piece, and then we grew to a 7-piece band. I don't know. I went on tour with Carlene Carter, and then Mickey Steele from the Bengals actually filled in for me. She was my backup.
Wow.
And everybody had somebody that would fill in for them. But it didn't really matter. In fact, when I was over, finished with this tour with Carlene, I came back and it was a Tuesday. And I'm like, oh my God, I get to see the Continental Drifters. So I didn't even tell anybody. I just kind of walked in, sat at the back of the room and watched the whole show, watching the Drifters, which was magic to me. And I thought that was the coolest thing. And that Mickey thought I was being ultra clever. And she, you know, because I tuned my E string down to a D sometimes. But she thought I did it on every song. So she learned the entire set, all the Continental Drifters songs, detuned. And it sounded really amazing, but I was like, wow, why did she do that? Does she do, you know, I thought she did it all the time, but of course, you know, she thought I did, so.
Wow.
It was quite fun.
And
so I was just a little fly on the wall watching my own band play.
Wow.
So what was the genesis of the idea for Continental Drifters? Just a few of you together just playing and saying, hey, let's just go play at Raji's? Or, like, how did that come
about? No. Carlo, again, I met Carlo through Jim Hill. And I actually took a trip to New Orleans once and, hung out with him. And he took me to all the strip joints on Bourbon Street. And then finally, I'm like, these are really nasty-looking women, Carlo. I'm not enjoying myself. I don't like strip clubs anyways, whatever. And he's like, all right. We went to one. I'm like, oh, at least these are pretty women. He goes, Mark, that's Joe and Fred. I'm like, what? Yeah, this is my dad's bar. And I'm with these guys, and I'm like, oh my god. I said, I have to leave now. But we became very good friends after that. And then he moved to Los Angeles, and he called me and asked if I knew anybody that needed a roommate, and I did, and got him a place to live. And then we started playing in different bands, and we had a great time. And so then I heard him sing songs, and Carlo, his voice is so distinct, and the types of songs he writes were so great. I'm like, dude, you should form your own band. He goes, well, if you play with me, I'll think about it. So that's where it started. Oh, and wow. We were at Molly Malone's one night, and they had you can sign up and sing or something, right? So I signed him up without his knowledge and made him get up there and sing in public.
Wow.
And he was not too happy about it, but he did it, and everybody really loved him. And I think that was the first moment where he realized, maybe I could do this. So his friend from New Orleans, Ray, and he worked for Microsoft at the time, and he lived real close to us, so the three of us started jamming. And then it just started building. And then once we had Danny Magoo and Gary Eaton on board, we booked a show at the Lingerie. That was our first gig. And we liked it so much, we thought, well, let's do a residency, and that would be more fun. So we went straight from that first show at the Lingerie to playing every night at every Tuesday night at Raji's.
Wow.
Oh, man. I wish I could have seen one of those Raji shows. I never got to see any of those, but I did see a show that you guys did at the Casbah in San Diego. And I don't know how long you guys played, but in my memory, it was like 3 hours that you guys played. And my wife and I stayed to the very, very, very end of the set till you guys left in the van. And do you happen to remember that gig in San Diego at the Casbah?
I do.
Yeah.
I do, yeah. Yeah,
that was an amazing show.
Not that many people came.
No.
It was a really fun night.
Yeah, and plus you guys kept playing and playing, and the few people that were there started to clear out. But I could not believe you guys blew me away. That show was amazing, even for a smaller crowd.
Thanks.
You guys were incredible. And then I got to see you guys again when you were doing the shows promoting the Omnivore release at the theater there.
Yeah. And we still played 4 hours, yeah.
Yeah, incredible. I mean,
crazy that way. We care about the audience, but we care about ourselves more. We're kind of selfish in that way. The band was there. We kept going, this is a great, it's like a club. It's like a private little club that we enjoy, that we could just get together and write songs and sing and party. We lived in this little house in Studio City near my apartment, actually, about four blocks away. It was up on a little hill. We called it the Batch Pad. Carlo and Gary and I all lived in, and then everybody else would just stay there. We'd just, play and have music and drink beer. And it was great. Wow. It was just the most fun time, really, at that stage of my life. I thought, it couldn't get any better than this. They're really great people, good friends, and all we care about is the music. When we play live, it's always 3 hours, 4 hours. People, it's like, God, why do you do that to your audience? And we're like, well, if they want to come for the ride, they can. We don't have to have them all night. I remember we played the Troubadour, I think, on that same tour that you saw us at. And, it was a good crowd. But, by the end of the night, it was half full. And people were just looking at us like, come on, we got to go to work in the morning. But they didn't want to give up. They just wanted to keep listening also. So they wanted to be part of the club.
That was me.
People that do that are good. Yeah, yeah. So I appreciate that. And I'm glad you get that and understand it. And to us, it was, we never thought, okay, let's make this a money-making venture. It was more like we're having the greatest time of our life and we're just enjoying ourselves.
You could really see that enjoyment from the audience on stage. You guys just looked like you were just good friends, just having a good time, just jamming. And the band had so many songwriters in it. I mean, all of you guys were songwriters, and you even had a few songs of yours, Get Over It, for example. Was formed in LA, but at some point in 93-94 you guys start moving to New Orleans, right? You relocated.
We got tired of LA for different reasons. Everybody, Carlo and Ray were from there. They got tired of LA. They wanted to move back. Peter and Susan were, you know, just about to have a child, their daughter Miranda, And they didn't think LA would be a good place to raise her, so they decided to move to New Orleans. And at that time, I actually was thinking about moving to Norway or to Austin, Texas.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why. Those are the two locations in my brain that I thought I could live at. I would enjoy myself. So they were like all talking about it. I'm like, well, I'm thinking about leaving anyway, so what the hell? Let's all go. So we did. It was funny to think that vibe, that community that we had was so important to all of us that we had to continue somehow. And it was sad that Gary wasn't able to come along with us, but it was wonderful, you know, the people that stayed. And it kept evolving, of course.
Wow.
And then, you know, Ray had an aneurysm that his doctor said he couldn't, you know, put a strap around his, you know, his shoulders anymore because it would just make it worse. So we called Robert Mache. And Robert Mache is, you know, one of, he was the main guitar player that we had for backup. And he knew all the songs and was living in Tucson at the time. And his marriage wasn't really working out. So he was very happy to just take that and move with us there also. So the pool for music and that community was strong for him. It's like this, you know, something that just can't be duplicated anywhere else, I don't think.
Wow.
I think anytime we want to play or can play, we would play. Well, now we're so separated that it's very difficult to get us all back together.
Yeah. Yeah, not a bad choice bringing Robert into the fold, I don't think.
Right.
And then
And Robert's great. I never met Robert until I actually played on Steve Wynn's first two solo records, because Steve wanted me to help him, and we were auditioning different guitar players and things for the record. And one night, he shows up, and he's like, "Well, I just got off the plane. I haven't slept in 3 days, and I was in Buffalo, New York, and now I'm here." And I'm like, "Well, okay, well, let's play." And all of a sudden, we're playing this really delicate song, and he just started playing this one note. It was just one note. It just started ringing and feeding back. I'm like, "Wow, that's really cool." And I look over, and he's sleeping. He fell asleep. But we thought, well, that is but even in his sleep, he played amazing. And he was only one note, but it was really amazing.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
And that's how he got the gig with Steve. And, you know, from then on, we became very good friends. With that kind of mentality, to be able to audition in that state of mind.
I love that.
You gotta be a serious baller if you can fall asleep playing one note and people go, "Hey, you know what? That's really good."
That was the best solo we ever heard on this show. It was awesome.
Epic.
And I want to note.
Yeah, epic is a true story.
Yeah.
Oh my.
I love that. I did want to note for our listeners that you referred to Susan and Peter. So that was Susan Kalsel from the Kalsels and Peter Hossapple from the DBs. So they were also part of this big family. I wanted to jump ahead a little bit, Mark, to August of 2005. So Hurricane Katrina hits. Do you mind talking to us about how that impacted you? In your personal experience?
It was, you know, of course it was, you know, very tough, you know, and I can talk about it now. I couldn't for a long time, but having lived there for about 15 years and, you know, had my wife and three boys and the young boys at the time, and a cat and whatever, you know, I was totally growing roots, and I was happy to be there. I loved New Orleans. And, you know, Katrina destroyed everything I'd ever owned, the house, every belonging, every amp, every guitar, except for one bass that I evacuated with, which is my favorite bass I've had since 1979.
Wow.
And I still have it. So I have one good memory from my previous life before
wow.
Katrina. So it's always like, you know, before K instead of before Christ. For me, it's before or after Katrina.
Wow. Wow.
what else can I say about Katrina? I don't know. You know, obviously, like, Susan's brother had died, Barry, in the storm. I had neighbors that died in their attics, as you saw on TV, all that stuff. So, you know, it was very sad. It's sad to not have those friends around me all the time. I ended up moving to Las Vegas, which is a totally different place. But, of course, my friends like to remind me that I moved from one city that was 24-hour drinking to another city that was 24-hour drinking. So, and I didn't even think about it because I don't go out here and to clubs because they don't have good clubs. They don't have really good music. You know, it's kind of sad for me on that level. But it's getting better. It finally has some really good stuff going on in Vegas. And I get to travel, and I still get to play music. It doesn't matter where I live anymore.
I will say that Vegas has some pretty good record stores, though.
They do. The Zia Records are really good. I like them a lot.
Yeah, same.
You ever go there?
I do, yeah. That's the... I'm not... Yeah. I don't like the Strip, but when we go there, we like pawn shops and the record stores. And Zia is where we always hit, so...
Yeah, it's a good store. And downtown's becoming kind of cool. It's a little gentrified, but it's better than it used to be. It used to be a rundown sort of barrio kind of neighborhood. But and now they have, you know, punk rock bowling every year.
Oh, yes.
And I get to see old friends from that.
Yeah.
You ever been to that?
No, but this year you get Circle Jerks. Yeah. Circle Jerks are reforming for the punk
rock. I know, yeah. Yeah, the Circle Jerks used to rehearse at my studio all the time. So I became very good friends with them.
Okay.
And I heard that Chris Morris actually name dropped me in his book somewhere, but I haven't read it.
Keith Morris.
Which I shouldn't say that. Yeah. I should actually read his book. For everybody else. Go read his book. It's supposed to be great.
I have it. It is a great book. It is.
Now we gotta find the place where Mark's mentioned.
Yeah.
There we go, Jeff. We've got a task.
Indeed.
I hear they were auditioning bass players, and I lent them my bass amp. There's the only sentence, I think, in there.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
Nice.
But you're in it. You're in it.
I'm in there somewhere, yeah. I'm in Keith Morris's book. I'm very happy about that.
Mark, Jeff and I want to take a step forward to... 2013. So Jeff and I hear this news that Dream Syndicate is performing together with other Paisley Underground bands at shows in San Francisco. So that went on December the 5th, 2013. And then Jeff and I are at the show at the Fonda Theater in Los Angeles the following night. And we're just curious, you know, you had been involved in so many different projects and, you know, other things. How was that for you getting back together with Dream Syndicate, with Steve and Dennis, to perform again as a, you know, as the band?
Yeah, you know, we've all been really pretty good friends all these years. We've stayed in contact. In fact, the tour, a Continental Drifters tour, we brought Steve along. We did like a co-headlining tour once. Mm-hmm. That was good. We're on his Sweetness and Light album tour, I think. So we kind of, you know, Linda and he, and then the Drifters would augment his band, and then we would play our set. So when you see that we play 3 to 4 hours our set, so we would actually play a normal Steve show, and then Continental Drifter show right afterwards. So yeah, that was fun. But yeah, no, we've always, you know, stayed friends. Like I said, I played on Steve's two first solo records, and Steve was probably our, you know, the Continental Drifter's number one guest appearance, you know, at our shows. He would just show up and he would jump on stage, and we'd play a mini set of his stuff, and he would jump back on stage. Yeah, fun times.
So it sounds like it was really natural for the Dream Syndicate to become a thing again.
Yeah, Dennis and I, when we play, it's very, it's simplistic, and it's a groove, and it's easy to get into that for me. I love just finding a groove and just laying into it as long as I can and try to make it interesting. And Dennis allows that to happen, because if you have a drummer that's all frills and always just riffing out and doing stuff, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And that's easy for me. I really enjoyed it.
I think
Steve's songs are really great, so I'm really happy about that. And having him bring in Jason from the Miracle Free, his other project was perfect. I thought he was perfect. He wasn't Carl, he wasn't Paul, but he could play the songs as if they were his, which was great. It didn't sound boring. It didn't sound like we were rehashing. We were actually in the moment and enjoying every song. Mm. So, yeah, it was easy.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned you and Dennis playing, and I think you guys, well, actually all four of you guys, are, Chris included, five of you guys, all are like a big, huge part of this band, and you guys lock into this groove. And it sounds really natural, and it lays down this foundation that for Steve's songs that Jason can do his thing, and it just makes this incredible musical experience or musical conversation, as you say, for me as a fan, yeah, to listen to what you guys do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you and Dennis are a big part of laying down that foundation and keeping those songs grounded while those guys do their things, right? And I wanted to talk about you guys reconnecting and the Dream Syndicate and releasing two albums. You guys did How Did I Find Myself Here in 2017 and last year with These Times. Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories about recording those musical conversations in the studio? Or is it more of like a jam situation?
No, they were fun. I mean, we had no idea. I mean, Steve always in his brain kind of goes, oh, I got a song, but it's like he comes to us and goes, well, here's a chord, here's something, and he just goes, just do whatever you do, it's not like I have a song, here's the part, here's the demo, I want you to play it like this. It never works that way. It's just more like, here's a very rough outline of an idea, and then we just take it. And usually, within the first, half hour, we've already figured out exactly what the song is and what it should do. Yeah. And so there, it was fun because we self-produced it. With Chris's assistance, because we wanted somebody that knew us. So we brought him out specifically to play on it, but also to be our second set of ears. So he was always in the control room, playing something along with us, and we don't even hear him half the time. After we get done with the take, we'll come in like, what is that? That is awesome. Who's playing that? Like, oh, that's Chris. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know you were in there. I didn't know you were playing along with us. It sounds like we were reacting to what he was playing, but it all fit together perfectly. It's great. And that's the magic of Chris, because he knows, I'll be that glue, I'll be that guy that connects the dots. So that was great. And the second time, we went to the exact same studio for These Times, and brought John Agnello. And John is great. John is such a pleasure to work with. Just very quick, easy, lets us do what we want to do. And he laughs. I can't laugh. I don't want to do it anymore if I can't laugh.
So does he do dancing in the studio and cheerleading while you guys are...
No, he doesn't. He did trip over something and almost break his toe one day, though. We kind of laughed, and then we realized he was actually really hurt.
Oh, no.
It was really icy out, and he slipped on the decking and hit something. I think he's fine now.
Well, Mark, before we let you go, Jeff and I want to tease the new Dream Syndicate album just a wee bit. Steve was very generous and sent us a sneak peek of the album, and wow, this album is a trip. big old trip. And talk about your musical conversations. This is a nice, long, winding one.
That's all it is. I told Steve, you know, we should call it that, a musical conversation. He goes, that's just too literal. I don't like this. But it was. I mean, it is. It's just a long conversation that we just did. We didn't. It wasn't thought. It wasn't talked about. It's just like, let's just go in the studio. Let's play. Let's invite Steve McCarthy. Maybe give us a little different, you know, edge, a different thing. But we all just started playing, and that it was literally a conversation. Somebody went blink, somebody else went blunk blunk. Next thing you know, it's like we're in the groove and we're playing, and we just kept doing it until the album was done, really. And we added some extra instruments, some really cool different textures and percussion and horns and all. I can't even really describe what the album is. Mm-hmm. I look at this album as it doesn't sound like any of the Dream Syndicate albums, but none of them do.
Right.
It sounds just like the Dream Syndicate, but it's something we've never done, which is really great. There's times where I think, you know, I look at it, it's like, this is like a modern day cocktail music or something. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking, well, this is really out there. This is really psychedelic. Or, wow, this is, you know, this is really cool pop, you know, type of songwriting that's not pop at all, you know. That's every type of musical influence for me since, you know, I started listening to music, which is a long time ago now.
Yeah, there's some really good
there's like soul, there's the funk, yes. There's, you know, on a bass level, I mean, I took a totally different direction, and I thought, you know, it'd be really fun to just be able to dance to a Dream Syndicate song, which I don't think that's ever been done before.
Well, you did bring that into the conversation. I will say that there's funk, there's soul, there's jazz, there's a lot.
Psychedelia.
I mean, and it.
Yeah, I don't think you can find a musical form that wasn't represented.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so from what we understand, the album is expected about April of this year. And
yeah.
And I think we've seen a possible title of The Universe Inside.
Yeah.
But we just like to remind our listeners, there is a song on this that is clocks in, Jeff, what, at a little over?
It's 20 minutes and 27 seconds.
Yes. And it is the funkiest psychedelic jam you're ever going to hear. Your ears will thank you, and that is a long conversation.
It is. It's funny because the album is that, too. I mean, you've heard the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Or just we believe we've heard the whole thing.
We've heard an hour worth of songs.
An hour's worth of songs.
Right, an hour's worth of songs. And I tell people that I have let them preview it, say, I know it's a lot to ask. It is something I know you will enjoy, and I know it'll be something that you'll probably want to turn off after 6 minutes, after 8 minutes, after 10 minutes, after 20. But the payoff is so well worth just sticking it out and listening. And, you know, I don't think I've ever made a record where it's like I expect the listener to work as hard as we did.
Oh.
Just to hear it and listen and participate in that experience.
That's really interesting that you say that.
I don't know if anyone else does.
Well, I don't know, Jeff, did it feel like work?
It didn't feel like work, but it did feel like an invitation to be part of the conversation.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know some people, though, can, you know, go, okay, you know, wow, this is, oh, come on. But there's always another release, another excitement, there's something that just goes, oh, my God. And then the end of that one song you're referencing, you know, just you feel exhausted. I do, at least. You know, I'm like, oh my god.
Okay. I want to have
a cleanser after that. You know. All right. I'll pick it up, and I try to convince everybody that listens to it. You've got to listen to it from beginning to end.
Yes.
I know it's a lot to ask, but it is worth it. Every second of it's worth it.
I totally agree.
It is my favorite Dream Syndicate record.
Wow!
Just to put that out there.
That says a lot. And Jeff and Mark, what I'm trying to picture is at the end of that song, I'm trying to picture everyone walking away from their instruments. That's what I'm trying to picture.
Well I did actually. I decided that I needed. We had a bottle of tequila, so I took out the tequila and I poured everybody a shot, and then walked around with a tray and handed them out, and then we started again. So yes, there was a little break after that. Wow. That was the only break, though. Yeah. That's why you'll hear that there is a finite ending for that one song.
Amazing.
Nice. I can't wait for this album to be released to the public. Yes. I can't wait to own a physical copy myself.
Me too. I think people really enjoy it, and I don't know. I hate to just sort of tell too much. I think waiting is always fun.
Yeah.
The excitement when you finally hear things for the first time, have your own thoughts and reaction to music, because music to me is it's personal for everyone. Right? Everybody might hear the same thing, but they get something different out of it.
Absolutely.
And to tell them what they should do or shouldn't do, like I've been doing, of course. You know. I don't think you should, but that's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Listen to the whole thing from beginning to end.
So I wanted to jump back to something you said earlier. You said that Stephen McCarthy plays on the record.
Yeah.
So
plays on all of it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that I wasn't aware of. So that's exciting to hear too. So we wanted to
Chris, Stephen, you know, the four of us, Dennis, Steve, Jason, and myself.
And where was that recorded?
So it's all live with all of us. Same studio.
Okay.
In Richmond, Virginia, Montrose.
Excellent, excellent. And it's going to be released to the same label, Anti or Anti Records.
Anti, yeah. And they're so great. When we didn't know what they would think of this record. You know, we just sent it to them and hoped they would like it, but they were like, this is the best album you've ever made. And this is the kind of music I would go home and listen to instead of hearing, like, yeah, it's good. It's a good Dream Syndicate record. It's just, but they were actually very, very helpful. And again, it's a double LP, beautiful artwork, and I think everybody will be very happy with it.
We're very happy. We love it.
Yeah.
So we did want to talk about the band coming back to the West Coast. You guys are playing all the time, everywhere. But on Valentine's Day, you're going to be playing at the New Parish in Oakland, and on February 15th at the Echoplex in Los Angeles, which will be there. Soraya will just be landing from a trip to Europe, so she'll land and go straight to the Echoplex, I believe, or a day or two later. So we'll be there to see you guys. Can we anticipate any of the new songs being performed next month?
I don't think so. I think we want to wait till the album is released to actually even go down that path.
Okay. That makes sense.
We're still trying to support. I mean, we just put a record out in May. It's not even a year yet, you know.
right.
That's the weird thing for me. It's like we've made more records in the last 3 years than we did it in the first incarnation almost.
Right.
And it's an album. The first time we ever made three albums with the same guitar player.
Yeah, I think creatively, you guys.
There's a first for that.
Yeah.
There you go.
You guys, I think, are at a high point in the band's history for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. We enjoy it. Otherwise, yeah, I said, we would not be doing it if we're not having fun. And we do. We're like, God, this is great. And we want to push ourselves. We don't want to just go, hey, let's write a Dream Syndicate song, or let's do something that, people expect us to do. And we're just, no, let's just do whatever we, whatever, because that's what's more honest, and it makes more sense for us to be able to listen to 20 years from now. Hopefully we're still alive in 20 years.
I hope so. And I hope you'll still be at the pace that you're at now. So putting out albums. But,
me too.
So Mark, we wanted to thank you for taking the time to have this conversation with us about all of your musical conversations. Yeah. We really appreciate it. We appreciate what you do as a musician, who you are, and for taking the time to have this conversation with us.
Thank you both very much. I appreciate it. And we'll see you in February.
Yes, sir. Yes. We're looking forward to it.
Now, Soraya, you have to stay awake, though, okay? We're not going to play as long as the Dream Syndicate. I mean, the Continental Drifters, but hopefully we'll be able to keep you awake.
Don't worry. I have a feeling Dream Syndicate has a way to keep me awake. I think they do. But I'm looking forward to it. I know Jeff is, and a lot of other fans here in LA. We just can't wait. So can't wait till February. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, you guys. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
What do you think, Soraya? What do you think of this guy?
First of all, Mark Walton has amazing stories, and I would kill to sit down with a drink and listen to more.
Oh, my gosh.
And have Mark Walton story time.
Oh, my
God. Story time.
I would love that. Yeah.
You know, Jeff, something that is just dawning on me as I just kind of think back over our conversation. He is a guy that speaks with real joy about music. Honest. And he just seems to be the happiest when he's playing, when he's making music, writing music. I find that I really like his attitude about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny, I was just thinking back to the episode where we talked with Jason Victor, and you renamed him Jason First Take Victor. So we have to name Mark Musical Conversation Walton. We just have to, right? I mean, I love that whole idea of creating and recording music as a conversation. I've never thought of it that way. I've thought of it as an expression.
Yeah.
And it's close, but I love that whole thought of it being a musical conversation. And yeah.
And if you think about, especially these last few Dream Syndicate albums, they're different conversations. It's like being at different parties with a different group of people having different conversations.
Yep, absolutely. And speaking of that, this new release, whatever it's going to be called, The Universe Inside possibly, is, like you said, a totally different conversation. In fact, yeah. It's multiple conversations throughout the album, and in some cases throughout the length of each song, it's multiple conversations. And I might agree with Mark that this could be the best Dream Syndicate album ever. I don't know, it's new.
Well, listen to what Mark said. Mark said it's my favorite Dream Syndicate album ever.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That's a lot. You know what I'm just kind of reflecting on, thinking about? I think you and I have had this conversation informally a lot, that a lot of the artists that we love and people that, you know, whose music really has a place in our heart, as they move forward, you wonder, can they do anything new? I'm learning that Dream Syndicate can. So, you know, is it possible to break new ground, explore new territory musically? Yeah. And look at, you know, some of the bands that we absolutely love are recording new things. You know, Matt Pucci has teased that Rain Parade is making some new music. And, you know, those are the things that make me happy to hear that people still find new conversations to be had musically.
Absolutely.
And man, Mark Walton is a cool dude.
Yes.
All these guys in Dream Syndicate, damn.
Yeah.
Ballers.
Yeah, sounds
but
like.
I'm still thinking about. I'm still thinking about the story of being in the studio and the note. The one note.
Where Robert's asleep.
That's just lasting. And but you know, it's like what Jason Victor said yesterday, or the other day. He said, you know, as we are recording the new album, oh, let me see what happens when I make this noise, you know? Yeah. And then the noise sticks and it becomes like a jumping off point for somebody else. And Mark was kind of alluding to the same things, like we just kind of started playing and seeing where it would go. And that's what I like hearing, is that musicians are not afraid to keep playing, keep trying, keep exploring and expressing and having these conversations. I just absolutely love it. And I cannot wait for this album to be out. People are gonna need to sit down and listen.
Yeah.
You know, really, really listen. And I think it's an important conversation to be had. I really do.
Yeah. And to me, it's a perfect headphones album to just kick back on a couch or a comfy chair with nothing else to do, nothing else bothering you. Throw on some headphones and listen to an hour of 5 songs.
Dang, dude. Yeah, and you will go on that trip.
Yes, yes. These aren't your 3-minute pop gems, power Hell pop gems.
No.
These
Hell
are some.
No.
Yeah.
Yep. What was the 3-minute rule back in the 60s? You had to have songs that were less than 3 minutes.
Right.
Nope.
Not one of these.
This is progtastic. This is no limit.
No limit, indeed. Well, we better wrap this up, because speaking of that, I need to go back and listen to this album with the filter of knowing that Stephen McCarthy from the Long Riders is part of this. So
all album.
Yes.
That's what he said.
So we need to cut this so I can go re-listen to these songs again with that.
And that. Go in search of Stephen McCarthy. I'm with you. Yeah. All right, gente. Aleluya.
Groove on, Paisley people.
Two things tonight. Paul had all his equipment stolen, and we're helping get some new stuff. The second, that's over. That's history. We're sad. Too bad. The second thing, though, is we're doing a live record tonight, and we're taping it, and it's there's mics around, and it's a scream a lot tonight, because there's 189 people here, and you'll be able to find your voice on the record more than they'll be able to find my voice on the record. Hopefully Elliot's ready up there. I think we're ready, so let's try it. Ladies and gentlemen, the fabulous Dream Syndicate. We'll be right back.
stop beating my hands and cold.